Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, Derek Mason, Braden Gall, and Titans win 42-20 yesterday. Move to 6-5 behind the legs of Derrick Henry and the arm of Ryan Tannehill, although Ryan Tannehill's legs played a factor as well yesterday. 159 yards rushing for Derrick Henry, a couple of touchdowns, 14 of 18, 259 and 2 for Ryan Tannehill, as the Titans average over 9 yards per play and dominate the Jags. We'll get back to that in just a second. Barrett Salee going to join us a little bit later on to look around the world of college football. Great news for Alabama fans over the weekend, so we'll get to that. Shocking, they had good news. But the Nashville Predators go on the road, and they break their losing streak. They snap the losing streak. They get a win against the Stanley Cup champs on the road in St. Louis. They rematch tonight at Bridgestone Arena, pregame at 6, puck drop at 7. And they win 4-2, thanks in large part to a hot start, something they have not been doing at all since basically the first couple of weeks of the season. 2 goals in the first period. Forsberg scores 20 seconds into the game, and they win 4-2. All that's good. A much-needed, desperately needed 2 points. That's all great. But they lose Victor Arvidsson in the process. 4 to 6 weeks out, lower body injury. If you want to guess and speculate, which of course is dangerous, it looks like his legs get caught underneath him because he's in the crease, and Robert Bortuzzo for the St. Louis Blues, a defenseman, comes in and just absolutely just crushes Victor Arvidsson on a cross check into the goal, actually. And while he's complaining to the referees about getting a penalty on that play, which is a hockey play, he then proceeds to turn around and give it to Victor Arvidsson again, slamming the cross check down into his back while he's still on the ice. Arvidsson's legs get caught up underneath him, and it looks like he sort of has bent back over the top of his legs, and then he sort of is grabbing at his knees and stuff when he gets up. So again, we can only speculate, but lower body injury, out 4 to 6 weeks. Robert Bortuzzo has a track record of this behavior. He's a repeat offender as defined by the NHL. And what really chaps my hide, Derek, and I'm not really sure even what that phrase means. I don't know where my hide is, I guess. I don't know what chapping means, but my hide is chapped over this.
It's dry.
I need some of that. I need some of that cocoa butter you got. Bortuzzo, 4-game suspension from the NHL. Okay, you may think that sounds like a lot. Not for a repeat offender. Not for a guy who clearly has not learned his lesson, has done this before. Literally, he's been in trouble with the NHL twice for cross-checking. This is what he does. And now it's cost you one of your best players. And this guy gets a 4-game suspension. He's not going to change his behavior because of a 4-game suspension. He's just going to continue doing what he's doing. Because guess what? Victor Arvidsson's out now. And it means he can't play tonight against the Blues. It means he can't play in a bunch of really important divisional games until probably the turn of the calendar year. I don't know what message the NHL is trying to send to a player who's clearly dirty and injuring other teams' best players. 4 games isn't good enough. It needs to be at least 10, 12, something more than that. Otherwise, he's not going to change his behavior. And in the meantime, if you're a Preds fan, you lost one of your best players and your top goal scorer from last year.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Again, it's not the first cross check, to the back. That's not the one.
That's a hockey play.
Yeah, that's sort of a hockey
it's
play.
A penalty,
is it a penalty? Yes, but it's a hockey play, and you see it a lot. It's the one when he's already on the ground.
Which is just a straight, dirty shot.
And you chuck him again. And it wasn't just a little bitty chuck. I mean, you're standing over him. You probably outweigh him by close to 100 pounds.
He's a defenseless player.
Yeah. And he doesn't think you're going to hit him again. So he's trying to get up. And then you get him again with another cross check. That one is over the, crossing the line right there. It reminds me again. That's why, going back to the whole brawl that happened in Pittsburgh and Cincinnati and with Pouncey, it's not the initial punch that I was upset with. It's when a guy fell to the ground and you kicked him. That is not a football retaliation. What you did to Victor Arvidsson was not a hockey retaliation.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a cheap shot. And then to add insult to injury, which was sort of – I'm laughing because – it was sort of funny because the goalie didn't know that
Arvidsson
his player,
was hurt.
Yeah, Arvidsson was hurt, and his player took a cheap shot. He kind of chucked him again in the back. It's like, look, Arvy can't get away from none of you. What is he doing that got y'all so upset?
He's scoring a bunch of goals.
That y'all got to do this to this little guy.
Well, he's standing in the crease scoring goals. That's what he does.
He's an agitator. He's a really good agitator. A good player and a really good agitator.
And I wonder, although Bortuzzo and Arvidsson neither will be on the ice tonight for the rematch, of course, at Bridgestone Arena, I can't imagine that it goes unnoticed. It'll be interesting to see how the emotions are managed tonight in that game. I would like to see a little something.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing too. I don't want to see dirty hockey. I don't want to see cheap shots. I don't want to see any of that. But I'd be okay with a few extra face washes, maybe a little extra shoving, you know, because this is a finesse team right now. And we talked about it last week. The Jets came in here, Vancouver came in here, and physically were not terrified, not scared, not threatened by the Predators at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Predators, St. Louis is a heavy team. You need to defend your guy a little bit tonight. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what that looks like. The Jacksonville Jaguars come in here and didn't defend anything. Ryan Tannehill, incredibly smooth and efficient yesterday. 14 of 18, 259 yards, 2 touchdowns. Averaged 13, almost 14 yards per attempt yesterday, mm-hmm. which is an exceptional number. Derrick Henry, 19 carries, 159 yards. He is on an absolute tear, over 8 yards a carry, 2 touchdowns. A.J. Brown, 4 catches, 135 yards. Harold Landry with his 8th sack of the season, 4 straight games with a sack. And, of course, a guy that looks like he'll get to double-digit sacks fairly easily. I have yet to ask you about Adoree Jackson, but we'll get to him in a minute. I just think this was a day where the Titans needed to execute. They had the advantage in a couple of areas. You know, Nick Foles in just his second real, you know, action back into the lineup for the Jags. You know, 48 passes wasn't very effective, and 4 touchdowns in 6 plays mm-hmm. in the third quarter is what really broke it open. And I thought the Titans made Jacksonville quit yesterday. And that sentence is something I think we've said about this rivalry over the years.
Yeah, you're right. It was almost like you saw this sort of building up with this game, because it was a tough battle, hard fought battle at halftime, right before halftime. But you just knew something was going to tilt the scales, and you figure, you know, the Titans were going to do something, because at this point, I don't think Jacksonville had done anything minus the first drive. I don't think they had done anything up to that point that would make me think, or anybody watching the game, that they were destined to do something big in that game. But you just saw, you know, Titans had some, you know, Derrick Henry had some good runs here and there, and the offense was moving the ball down the field at times. You just knew, like, man, this Derrick Henry is, as this game continues to go on, he's going to be the reason why they win. And lo and behold, halftime comes, halftime's over, and Derrick Henry is the reason that they win that football game, because he imposed his will on the Jacksonville Jaguars, as he has done for the last 2 or 3 seasons against this team. Since that Monday or Thursday, I can't remember. I think it was a Thursday night. No, it was a Monday night.
Thursday against Jacksonville.
Thursday night. Yeah. We were sitting next to each other in there. Exactly.
Thanks for remembering.
I didn't know whether it was a Thursday night or a Monday night.
I had such a good time with you that night.
Yeah, we had a great time. he has led the league in 3 categories: rushing, touchdowns, and yards per carry. He has led running backs in those 3 very important categories: rushing yardage, yards per carry, and touchdowns. And he added on to it yesterday. That tells me this is a much different Derrick Henry than what we saw previously before the Jacksonville game last Thursday, last year on a Thursday night. And he is slowly, I think, and I said this earlier for those that didn't hear it, and we can debate it back and forth. Is he the best running back in the National Football League? No, he's a top 10 or top 5-7 running back, yes. But he is the best runner in the National Football League at this point in time. And I would
dare anybody to
challenge that. Based upon what he has done as a runner, not a running back,
right,
as a runner, hand it off to Derrick Henry, and you're going to get positive yards. He averaged 8 yards per carry last night. He's averaging over 4 yards per carry for the season. He is arguably the best runner in the National Football League at this point. And this is what the Titans need. This is their MO. This is their foundation of their organization. Play really good defense and run the football. And they've done that the last couple of weeks. The defense uncharacteristically has given up points prior to this game. But one thing and one thing only you can be assured of moving forward is that Derrick Henry will run the ball physical. And it's going to be tough for teams moving forward to stop them. But the Titans have to stay committed to what they're doing.
Yeah, and I think Arthur Smith did that yesterday. I think Ryan Tannehill complimented him very well with some really gutty runs and then a lot of really – you know, listen, it's about efficiency for me. I'm all about the efficiency. Mm-hmm. Yards per attempt, yards per carry, yards per play, all that good stuff. How efficient are you on any given snap? And Ryan Tannehill yesterday, 18 attempts for 259 yards. Nick Foles had 48 attempts for, 272? So basically, same level of production yardage-wise with three times the number of attempts.
Uh-huh.
That means you're not being nearly as efficient. Ryan Tannehill, incredibly efficient. And the offense now... you know, the offense is averaging almost 30 points a game with Ryan Tannehill as the starting quarterback. So, at the end of the day, Arthur Smith gets credit. Tannehill gets credit. The offensive line only gave up one sack yesterday. They were better. So there's a lot of things to like about what you saw yesterday. Doesn't mean that there's not huge games coming because you're only 6-5, and you're still a game back in the division, but you are firmly in the playoff race because you kept your hopes alive yesterday. What does the AFC playoff picture now look like around the Tennessee Titans? We'll explain when we come back. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans win 42-20 yesterday. Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, the whole thing's working. Morning Drive, Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And streaming, of course, on the Game Nashville app. And if you miss any of the show, we've moved our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Search Morning Drive in Apple and Spotify. Or log on to thegamenashville.com to find our daily audio. Derek, what do you do with that audio? You rate.
Review.
And
subscribe.
That's right.
RRS.
That is right. So the playoff picture around the Tennessee Titans. Oakland loses yesterday in really hideous fashion. 34-3 to the New York Jets. Sam Darnold looks spectacular. They fall to 6-5. Pittsburgh wins a really close game against a bad Cincinnati team. So neither of those two teams looked particularly good yesterday. But Pittsburgh does win. They bench Mason Rudolph in the third quarter. Devlin Hodges comes in and they win the game. They are now 6-5. Cleveland, watch out for the Browns, although the Titans don't mind if they get into the race because they've got the tiebreaker. Cleveland now 5-6 on the season. They've won three straight. Don't look now. They did play the Dolphins, so I don't know if it counts as a win, but whatever. And then, of course, on Thursday night last week, Houston beats Indianapolis, so the Colts now fall to 6-5, which means, Derek, we have a four-way tie for the final wild card. The Buffalo Bills sitting in the driver's seat for one of those wild card spots. The Texans now a game up on both the Colts and the Titans in the division. But you now have four teams tied at 6-5 for the final wild card spot. Pittsburgh has the current tiebreaker because of conference race. Oakland is in second place. The Indianapolis Colts are in third place, and the Titans are in fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all fine and great. They're in the race. They play the Colts and the Raiders, two of the teams they are tied with, in the next 2 weeks. So it is all sitting there in front of the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, it is. They got an opportunity if you're looking at the standings. They're tied for that sort of last spot in the AFC in regards to playoffs. They're in that position with Indianapolis, the Raiders, Pittsburgh, Kansas City still there, but Kansas City can win their division. So you kind of.
The Raiders will play at Kansas City this weekend before hosting the Titans next weekend.
Absolutely. So that's going to be like the Titan game this weekend versus Indianapolis is going to be big.
Yep.
Huge. I mean, Raiders game versus Kansas City is going to be big because the winner of that game keeps themselves very close to that last spot, and the loser kind of goes down and have to make up a game here or there.
Now Oakland will play Jacksonville, the Chargers, and the Broncos the final 3 weeks of the season. All three are tricky, but all three they'll
winnable
probably
games,
be favored
yeah.
in those games.
And I'm looking at this game as in And if you ask Titan players, they say, you know, it's a game by game. And I get that. That's coach speak. That's what you're saying in the media. But what you're saying behind closed doors is you're looking at these games. You're looking at all six of these games. And you figured out every scenario that needs to happen for you to get in the playoffs. And one of those scenarios, obviously, is to win outright. If you win outright, you give yourself an opportunity, not one, to make the playoffs, but have a home game.
And maybe win the division.
Even though it's a long shot, maybe you can win the division at 11-5. Now, it's going to take a lot because you play Houston twice at the end of the season, but you have an opportunity to not only make it to the playoffs, but one, get a home game, two, win the division. And that's ultimately what you want, is to win the division, put yourself in a situation where you have a home game or and a bye that week. And that's – is that far out of their reach? Probably, yes, getting a bye because, you know, you have
– it's not going to happen.
New England is 10-1 and then the Ravens, Baltimore. Yeah, so them getting a bye is –
I think winning the division is the upside.
It's still tangible.
But
it's still there.
The idea that we can even have that conversation right now, though, after the way they looked early in the season. Now, again, Taylor Lewan has rounding into form finally. And again, it's almost like you look at these schedules for these other teams, and the Colts will play, you know, they host the Titans this weekend, obviously, in a huge game, but they play at Tampa, at New Orleans, at Jacksonville, and Carolina. You know, there's a couple of really tough games in there. Road game against Jacksonville to wrap up the season could be
Jacksonville's done.
Quit at this point. But it almost doesn't matter. It almost doesn't matter to look at these schedules and say, oh, well, who's Pittsburgh playing? Do they have a tough schedule and all this stuff? And that's the one team that maybe is out of your control as a Titans fan, because they'll play Cleveland this weekend and then Arizona, Buffalo, the Jets, and Baltimore. So a couple of really tough games with Buffalo and Baltimore, but – you know, the Jets have been better. Arizona, and they don't scare me. Mm-hmm. Cleveland's playing much better football right now. But it almost doesn't matter, because all that really matters to you if you're a Titans fan is you literally are playing all the teams you're chasing. Four of your next five games are going to come against the Texans, Colts, and Raiders. Mm-hmm. And those are the three teams that are either tied with you or ahead of you in the standings. All you have to control your own, and I hate the phrase control your own destiny, because I get it, destiny's predetermined, whatever, mm-hmm. but the idea, it's all in your own, like, the ball's in your court, for mm-hmm. lack of a better cliche, obviously.
No, you do because your actions dictate how then your future will go. If you win football games, if you do the things necessary, then you will take care of what's going to happen in front of you. But if you don't, if you don't take advantage of those things, listen, you can play a team and all of their players are hurt. Just about all of their key players are hurt. And you're thinking, oh, it was predestined. Their players are hurt. We're going to win this game. Well, no. If you don't take care of what you need to take care of, then you're not going to win it. We've seen it, you know, happen in the NFL or across the board in other sports where you face a team you should beat for every reason on the map, and then you end up losing to them. The Tennessee Titans understand, yes, we are taking this game by game, but that's what they are telling us. But inside of that building, they are looking at playoff scenarios. I've had it where coaches have put up on the board. This is why I'm telling you, yes, they're going to tell us that, but they're looking at the big picture. Right, you have to look at the big picture in order to know the things that can happen and can happen.
Right.
They put up, you know, okay, here's everybody's schedule. If we win the games we're supposed to win or take care of business, then we don't have to worry about that. But if we lose a game here, this is who everybody else is playing that is in the hunt with us. Then we got to worry about this team losing. Now, we don't put a lot of attention toward it, but you got to know what everybody else is doing.
And the players,
they don't sit there and spend all day doing it, but they look.
It's the same
and
thing
they understand.
It's the same thing with college football players or hockey players. Like, they all have phones, guys.
Exactly.
Like, they all have phones. They all can look at the internet and read Twitter and look at standings and check out stats and columns and articles. Like, all these guys have rabbit ears. Big Raj, we know, has rabbit ears.
Oh, he definitely has rabbit ears.
Taylor Lewan listens to every single human being that's ever said anything about anything. Real quickly, the other note from yesterday, I think defensively, and we've talked about how You know, they gave up some points to some good offenses. Gave up a lot of yards to the Chiefs, but that's to be expected.
Exactly.
Jayon Brown was back in the lineup yesterday, 15 combined tackles, total tackles yesterday. Played 98% of the snaps for the Titans yesterday. Jarrell Casey back in the lineup, 57% of the snaps yesterday. Played 50 snaps, 49, I believe, there. So he was a big part of the defense. So getting those two guys back. And then Corey Davis, I believe, led all wide receivers yesterday with 39 snaps, 74% of the time he was on the field. So three big names back onto the field yesterday for the Titans also had a big impact as well. Delanie Walker, however, did not suit up. So there's your injury update from the Titans' win over the Jags, 42-20 yesterday.
Quickly, I do want to give note to, and this is not based, you know, not in our market, but, you know, you just respect this player. Frank Gore moved into third place. He passed Barry Sanders on all-time rushing list.
That's a sentence I don't
yesterday. Exactly. So kudos to Frank Gore. The guy, you know what he went through as far as injuries, and he's come back and made himself one of the best running backs in NFL history, and he's averaging 4 yards a carry for his career. So kudos to Frank Gore. I know Buffalo fans are here in Nashville. So if you're listening, kudos to Frank Gore.
If you're a football fan, yeah, you should be a Frank Gore fan.
Yeah, Frank Gore is just, he's been awesome, man. Everywhere he's went, he's been a consummate pro. So he moved up to third place on the all-time rushing list, passing one great Barry Sanders.
Yeah, good note there for sure. No question about it. All right. Over the weekend, the Tennessee Vols obviously got a huge win. The Georgia Bulldogs stayed in the playoff race by beating Texas A&M and another defensive performance by the Dogs, but maybe the biggest story in the SEC is that Alabama got the help it needed last weekend. So we'll describe and explain that and talk with Barrett Salee when we return right here on Morning Drive. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Derek Mason, Braden Gall, and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Barrett Salee joining us here from CBS Sports, covering all things college football and the SEC. And Barrett, first of all, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, man. Always a pleasure to talk to you. But number two, how surprised are you that we are sitting here talking about a Tennessee Volunteer program with, what, 5 consecutive wins and a chance to go to 7-5, maybe get to the Outback Bowl? I mean, just how surprised are you that we're even here at this point with this team?
Well, first, happy Thanksgiving to you guys as well. Yeah, I mean, I'm floored. I mean, it is remarkable to think that a team that lost to a pretty good Georgia State team, although, you know, Tennessee did get whipped at the line of scrimmage, which is inexcusable. And then, you know, to have that BYU game go the way it did, and to now be sitting here thinking 7-5 is not only a possibility, but at this point an extreme probability. I put this on Twitter, and, you know, the internet got mad. Take Ed Orgeron out of the equation. You can make a case. I'm not saying that I would, but you could, that Jeremy Pruitt is SEC Coach of the Year for what he's done, because that Tennessee team could easily be Arkansas right now, and it's not. And I think that's a huge credit to that staff, a credit to the leaders on that team like Juwan Jennings and Daniel Petulli. And yeah, I mean they figured it out. The defense looks phenomenal. Garantano apparently got the message over the last month. It's been remarkable. And I think if you're a Tennessee fan, look, it's not the way you wanted it, but it's the way it is, and I think you know, the end result should be the same result you wanted preseason. Hope that the team's going to be competing for division titles in the next couple of years, because after what's gone on, I mean, I don't see how you can't come to that conclusion. It's still going to take a little while, but the fact that Jeremy Pruitt, in his second year as a head coach, went through all of this and came out the other side looking the way this program looks tells me that, you know, it's a hard job to be a head coach in college football, and for a second year coach to orchestrate this, that matters a lot.
We're talking with Barrett Salee, CBS Sports. Now, Barrett, we thought that after the Tua injury and where they ranked Alabama, that they were, their shot of them getting into the playoffs was very slim. You know, they're still in there, but at 12-1 with the teams above them and what they were doing out in the Pac-12, it was going to be a little bit harder for them to get in. Lo and behold, Oregon loses. We still got Utah, But what do you think the probabilities now of Alabama sneaking into the playoffs?
Well, here's the thing is that, yes, I think, you know, having a domino fall is obviously huge. But to me, of all the dominoes that Alabama needed to fall, that was actually the wrong one. Mm-hmm. Because if Alabama's going to get in, the best scenario and certainly the most likely scenario would be that a one-loss Pac-12 Oregon champ was in the argument with Alabama after beating Auburn. And those being the only two options, because then Alabama could easily play the card of, you know, common opponent beating Auburn on the road with a backup quarterback. They could use that to their advantage. Now with Oregon losing, you know, that's two losses, and Alabama would certainly win that argument now. You know, if that's the case, but that's not going to be the case. That situation, you know, a two-loss Oregon, you know, conference champion, I think is far less likely because clearly they have flaws, and Utah being Utah is what they are. And then, you know, Alabama at that point would be in the discussion potentially with somebody else that would have a much stronger case. So, you know, what Alabama really needed was an exclusive one-loss Pac-12 conference champion Oregon to get in. That was the most likely scenario. Now that's not going to happen, but you know, that it would be better to me anyway if Utah wins that game, and Alabama's not winning a discussion with Utah.
No, but if Oregon beats them, then they're in great shape. So we'll see what happens. Barrett Salee joining us here. Georgia Bulldogs, defensively, I don't think people will realize statistically how good this team is. I think they've allowed 19 total trips into the red zone. They've given up like a rushing touchdown all season. They are leading the SEC in every major defensive statistical category. The offense certainly doesn't look like a team that's going to score 48 points on Ohio State or LSU or whatever. But if they can create low-scoring games against LSU in the SEC championship game, after watching what they did to A&M, I think this Georgia team is pretty damn salty. What do you make of their showing so far, and do they have enough offense, or is the defense good enough to beat LSU?
Well, with the offense, I always thought that that there was more in the tank that they just chose not to show. But 11 games into the season, that just – you know, you can't just assume that at this point. You know, so I think Georgia is what it is, and I hate using that phrase, but they're a team that wants to play conservative, and they're a team that if they start making mistakes, they're a little bit more exaggerated and a little bit more costly because, like we saw against South Carolina, Georgia dominated that game in every facet of that game except the four turnovers, and it cost them to a point where they were scrambling just to get back into it. You know, a team like LSU, yeah, that a hurt. That would have certainly been a problem, and it certainly would have put them in a hole. But they'd be far more likely to climb out of that hole. Georgia just couldn't do it. So I think that's the problem, is that when you make a couple of mistakes for Georgia, the margin for error is a lot thinner than it is for other schools. So, but that said, I mean, look at what LSU did. I know statistically, you know, they put up a bunch of yards against Auburn. A lot of those were empty yards, and I don't think anybody who watched that game came away with any opinion other than, dang, Auburn's defense is legit and slowed down that LSU offense as much as it possibly could. It just couldn't get offense. So, you know, I think Georgia is certainly capable of replicating that, especially considering they've got the personnel from a secondary perspective to play one of those, you know, 3-1-7 style defenses that Auburn used so successfully. So, yeah, I mean, Georgia's defense will keep them in that game, and it will not be, you know, an ultra-high-scoring game. It's just a matter of, does Georgia make those same mistakes, or at least a couple of those mistakes that it made against South Carolina to put them in a hole, or do they play a clean game? Because, you know, we've seen this year that, you know, DeAndre Swift, even though he doesn't have the numbers, he's won football games for Georgia. The Notre Dame game, for two series, all he did was go nuts, and that was all they needed. Same thing happened against Texas A&M. Same thing happened against Auburn. And you look at what LSU was and what, you know, kind of hurt them against Alabama. It was Najee Harris in the third quarter. So yeah, I think they have the firepower, but the problem is the margin for error is so thin because of the way they play offense. And at this point, it's just, I think, irresponsible to assume that suddenly they're gonna find it because they've been holding it back or something like that.
Now, Barrett, with one game left in college football, basically in the regular season, and then obviously we got the championship games. Right now, where you sit, the top four teams, LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, do you think this will ultimately be the playoffs? I know if Ohio State lose to Michigan but comes back and win the Big Ten championship, I think they're still in.
Sure.
LSU is in, I think, unless they fall apart the next two games. Clemson, I don't think anybody can beat them moving forward, at least their championship game. Do you think that as long as Georgia wins the SEC championship game, it stays the three team, I mean the four teams that it is now?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that if there was a team that would be on the brink, it would be LSU, which is crazy to think that they could, you know, lose a conference championship game and be out. We haven't seen that scenario or how the committee would handle that scenario yet this in this era. So, you know, a lot of it, I think, would depend on Utah. Mm-hmm. Because Utah is a really good football team. I mean, they are really good. And so, you know, what does their end result, their resume look like? Because suddenly the committee seems to like USC. If USC, you know, wins or if USC, you know, gets bumped up despite the regular season being over, then, you know, how good of a loss is that for Utah? Because it might look a whole lot better, you know, than people realize. And on top of that, what does Texas do for LSU? Because, you know, I think we're kind of stuck in this rut now where we all just sort of think that LSU's got this great resume. Well, not really. I mean, they lost to a Texas team that has the same record as Illinois, Kentucky, and Tennessee. So, you know, this idea that they've suddenly got this, you know, that they've got this insurmountable resume and body of work to fall back on, it's not really reality, especially if Auburn loses to a backup quarterback in Alabama that, you know, torches them. Okay, so that's a four-loss Auburn team. So I think it would still depend on Utah. I think it still would also depend on Oklahoma. Oklahoma's played some really good defense for the last six quarters. If that continues, I think that'll fit well with the committee to say, all right, look, you know, their problem, they fixed it, and they fixed it at the right time. So, you know, LSU would be on the brink. My gut is that they would still get in. But I don't think it would be a shoe-in, and a lot of it would depend on what Utah does the final two games, what Oklahoma does the final two games, and how dominoes around college football, you know, move USC potentially up, even though USC is not playing any more games.
It's really funny, Barrett. I think not only could LSU lose that game to Georgia, but also Ohio State could lose to Michigan, and I think they both get in because as one-loss teams, they still would have better resumes than all the other one-loss teams. So, I mean, I feel comfortable about LSU. I think Ohio State could lose to Michigan this weekend. Now, could they lose to Minnesota?
Braden,
probably not.
Like Braden Gall, Michigan apologist. Let's give you the right title.
Wait a second. Michigan is 9-2, dude. Like, they're a good football team. I don't know what planet you're on. I'm just suggesting Ohio State has earned the right.
Hold on. Me and you have gotten into heated discussions.
Yes.
About how you think Jim Harbaugh
is a good football coach. No, he's a good – no, dude, come on. Don't miss – hey, I can shut you off and cut you off anytime. It's my radio show, all right, Barrett? But here's the deal. I think he's a good football coach, a very good football coach. I don't think he's elite. They're 9-2, but this is not about Michigan. This was a question about Ohio State, Barrett. The question was about Ohio State, and if they go on the road and lose a close game to a top 15-ranked team, that's still a better resume than what anyone else has built it, including Georgia even potentially. So – I actually think Ohio State and LSU are almost locks at this point, regardless of what takes place the rest of the year.
No, I think if in that situation, if that were to play out, let's just say LSU loses the SEC championship game and Ohio State loses to Michigan and beats Minnesota or Wisconsin, whatever. I think Ohio State's in a better position at that point because they would have a conference championship game to show off, which – you know, I don't think should be a factor, but it is, obviously. And then, you know, Georgia beating LSU, that's obviously, you know, a better loss, but not that much better, right?
Right.
I'd agree with you. I think Ohio State would get the benefit of the doubt over LSU again, especially if Texas ends up, you know, being a 6-6 football team, because then I think the committee would have to realize that Texas is not very good and that LSU win is you know, come. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, I'd be fascinated to see if they value conference championships, which LSU would not have, over eye tests, because LSU would pass the eye test more than Utah or Oklahoma. But I don't know if the committee would think it passed it that much, because people don't realize how much Utah has just been destroying folks lately. And yeah. I know it's the Pac-12, but my God, that team's good.
They are, and I agree with you, but how many – they have zero combined top 25 wins. Oklahoma's got like one. I just don't think that the resumes are – I think the eye test you're accurate about, and they wouldn't have the conference title, but I think the resume would be heavily in LSU's favor. They've got wins over top 15 teams, and Utah and Oklahoma don't. So I think they're in good shape.
Right, Braden, but then Auburn would not be a top 15 team at that point, because Auburn's going to lose to Alabama.
That's fair, although it still would be a better win than anything Utah's got at that point. So
I don't know. Would it be better than Oregon? Because even though Auburn beat Oregon, Oregon would have three losses.
No, you're right.
Four.
You're right. This is why we don't need expansion. Thank you, Barrett.
I know. I love it, right? We get to yell at each other. You still think Michigan's good, which is it's not.
Listen, I know that I can have Barrett on, and I can say, listen, should we expand the playoff? And then I know we'll just agree. I know that Barrett's on team 14.
No expansion.
He's on team no expansion with us, Derek.
You know what,
yes.
But you know what we should push for first? We're going to have a long discussion on SiriusXM about this the entire offseason. I am going to make a stand. My platform for presidential election in 2020 is team no divisions.
I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. I think it should be one versus two in every conference in conference championship
right.
games. I totally agree.
Hey, I got a question. Would you guys vote for me for president if my entire campaign platform is team no divisions, lasers on football to spot footballs, and goal line cameras down each goal line on both sides in every stadium?
Yes, mm-hmm. But one more. You need to get rid of standard time. It needs to be always daylight savings time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, no. Well, if we're talking time zones, split right down the middle, two time zones across the entire country.
That's something to think about. Also, can you get rid of one of the Dakotas and just make them one Dakota? Can we do that, too?
Yeah. Well, but see, then you lose the symmetry of 50 states.
No. We'll give D.C.
Then you'd have to change the flag.
No. D.C. D.C. has more people than both Dakotas combined. They need some senators, okay?
Okay. Okay.
The District of Columbia needs some senators. Dakota doesn't need four. All right.
Or better, we can just annex the panhandle of Florida into South Georgia, because it's pretty much that anyway.
Or Alabama.
There you go.
All right, man. Thank you so much, Barry. We appreciate it.
The world's problems.
Yes, exactly. We'll solve some more problems with the world. Stick to sports when we come back. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek's over there on, what are you on over there? Periscope, Snapchat, Instagram?
No, Instagram.
What are you doing? This is where you're supposed to promote decorating dead interiors,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, this is where I'm going to promote decorating dead interiors.
All right, hang on.
Let's
hang
go.
On, hang on. Hang on. Fire the music.
The world is a crazy place.
Crazy sounding pretty good right now.
Let's lighten the mood.
After all that seriousness, you're just going to crumple it up and throw it in the trash.
And stick to sports. Now, on Morning Drive.
I don't even know why I need this
multimedia
thing.
Mogul, yeah. Derek Mason.
Brought to you by the good folks at Decorating Den Interiors. Stick with the pros at Decorating Den. Single men are just men that are moving here to Nashville, and you don't have that significant other. Or if you do have that significant other, and you guys are just kind of going back and forth on what you need to do with your home, then what you need to do is go see Bonnie over at Decorating Den Interior, because they will decorate your home, office, or your outdoor spaces. Request a complimentary appointment, which is free in this world, at decoratingden.com.
You're like Haskins right now.
Yeah, that's right.
You forget to go back on the field. You forget to kneel. You're over here taking selfies with fans.
Hey, man, you got to do that.
Dwayne Haskins forget that there was a football game happening?
Yeah, he was taking selfies and forgot about the national anthem.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
No, he went to go take selfies after, I guess, they get a stop, and then he was supposed to go back on the field to take a knee.
In the game.
Yeah. In the game, and then he was like...
He was chilling.
He was just taking pictures.
He thought the game was over.
Yeah, he thought the game was over.
Okay. So, yeah.
Game's not over.
Derek really is on his phone right now the whole time.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, there's Marquise.
What's up, Periscope?
We can't see you, Marquise.
All right,
go ahead, Marquise.
Yeah, come on.
Number one.
All right, let's go to my favorite state, and that is Florida. Florida's my favorite state outside of Alabama and California, because I get a lot of good stories, and Tennessee, of course.
Thank you.
Sorry, Tennessee. But I like it because it has all these interesting stories. And I didn't think that this was still a thing. You remember when people used to pull up on you at the light and they used to like rev their engine, like showing off their engine a little bit? You remember that? It's like, you know, early 90s stuff.
Okay.
I don't think people still do that anymore.
No, I don't think so.
But yeah, there is. There's a Florida man that did it to a police officer that he did not know that was a police officer. So this guy tried to race the police officer. Now, it's not known whether this was an unmarked car, whether this was just a regular police car. But apparently, he ended up going to the police car, which is unmarked or not marked, and trying to race the police officer, and then went 124 miles per hour.
Oh, Lord.
And then got arrested because
of it. He deserved to get arrested.
Well, so the lesson of this is don't race police officers.
Pretty much.
Also, can we just, like, is it sort of a douchey move to rev your engine at the stoplight?
Yes, it is.
I hate when people do just that.
And then they stare at you while they do it too. Like, and they always have sunglasses on. They stare at you.
Let me ask you this.
First of all, it's winter. You don't have to wear sunglasses.
I totally disagree. It's cold out. I'm going to wear sunglasses if it's sunny. So that's don't you ever talk about. I have very sensitive eyes, Marquise. Okay. Number two, what's worse, like the loud music at the stoplight, or the revving the engine? Like, do y'all turn your radios down if you got the windows down and it's a nice day and you got the music's up? Do you turn it down when you come to a stoplight or a stop sign?
Yeah, I turn it down just a little bit.
I do too.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of a...
I just want to know what's going... Like, if I
kind
stop...
Kind of a D-bag move as well.
I want to know what's going on around me, so I turn it down just a tad bit.
What about
so
neighborhood? When you get into the neighborhood, do you turn it down?
If my windows are down?
Yeah.
Yeah. But my windows are typically not down because...
I'm a windows down guy, though.
Yeah, I'm not.
I would ride with the windows down if I could. I like the wind in my hair, Derek. You don't have any hair. You don't know what that feels like.
You're right about that.
Well, see, I just don't want to, like, pull up on a mom and her kid, and I'm listening to Two Life Crew in the car. So that's why I just turn it down a little bit. But people in my neighborhood, like, I live in an apartment complex, and you can just hear people.
The trumps rattling.
And I'm just like, dude, like, I turn that. And then it makes it worse because I stay in an apartment complex, and then, like, behind my apartment is, like, road. It's nothing but like road. It's like a whole road that I can just hear all the cars go through.
So
I can
only hear music cars, you hear music, you hear everything.
I hear everything.
Sounds like you need a new apartment complex.
Yeah, it does.
Sounds like. Yeah. All right, we'll take care of it.
Get a little bit more chingway, you can.
Yes. Ching ching.
Number two.
All right, so now I can't wait for Thanksgiving because I get to see my grandmother. I love my grandma. Everybody loves grandmas. Grandmas are probably the favorite of the family members.
We need grandmas in the world.
Everybody needs grandmas in the world. But don't pull up on a grandma. Don't try to break into a grandma's house, especially when that 82-year-old grandma was a former bodybuilder.
Oh, snaps.
I'm going to play this. Now, this is coming from New York, and this lady, 82 years old, had her house broken into by an intruder, and she had to fight him off, and here's her explaining that story.
A young man is in my home, broke the door, and you know what? It's kind of semi-dark, and I'm alone, and I'm old, but guess what? I'm tough. And you want to know what happens? He picked the wrong house to break into. I took that table, and I went to working on him, and guess what? The table broke, and it had metal legs, and I'm jugging him. And when he's down, I'm jumping on him. And the telephone is still on for 911. I'm running in the kitchen. There's a bottle of baby shampoo on the table. I grabbed the shampoo, and guess what? He's still on the ground in his face, all of it, the whole thing. And he's trying to get up, and he's pulling. And I got the broom, and he's pulling the broom, and I'm hitting him. I'm hitting him with the broom, hitting him. And guess what? He wants to get the heck out of there, and I'm trying to help him get out of the house, but he's too heavy. I can't move him. He's dead weight. And at that time, the police arrive on the porch, and the house is already open, so they come in. He's laying down already, because I had really did a number on that man. I'm serious. And you want know something? I think he was happy when he went in the ambulance because I sent him in the ambulance. Yes, I did.
Kudos to you.
What is that, a movie? Yeah, what's her
name? Was that a movie?
No, this wasn't a movie.
Well, that wasn't Home Alone 4, was it?
What was her name? Because I think this woman should run for president.
Yeah.
This lady's amazing.
She's my hero already.
God, man. You gotta love it. Because she did a...
She went with
she
the
did
table?
A movie move. Because she went...
Kudos to you.
What is that, a movie? Yeah, what's her
name? Was that a movie?
No, this wasn't a movie.
Well, that wasn't Home Alone 4, was it?
What was her name? Because I think this woman should run for president.
Yeah.
This lady's amazing.
She's my hero already.
God, man. You gotta love it. Because she did a...
She went with
she
the table?
She did a movie move. Because she went and got the shampoo and squirted in his eyes.
After breaking a table on top of him and
was
stabbing
him
with...
And juking him and juking him.
I wonder if she broke the broomstick in half like one of the karate movies, like crushing with her foot.
She's telling the story, and she's like, well, I used the table, and then I used some shampoo, and then I got the broomstick I was beating him with. And then
that's Home Alone 4
and
right
then he,
there.
And then, and then she insulted his weight.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, in the process. This woman
is just too heavy, just dead weight. I couldn't pick him up. Man, he was happy getting to the ambulance.
Because I did a number on him. That woman.
I love that woman.
She is a modern American icon.
Yeah. They should build a statue of her and put it in the middle of the city.
I agree.
And how
city square.
How dare you try to rob a lady like that, 82 years
no,
old?
No, that's what
man.
You get, man.
Yeah, you deserve
that's what you
it,
get.
Man.
You deserve to get your butt whipped.
Well, he
by
didn't her. Know the lady. He probably didn't know the lady was 82.
I don't
but
know
his bad. His bad.
Would you imagine if you're a burglar, you got like a mask on over your head, you walk in the house, this is like an 82-year-old lady. Oh, my bad. I was going to rob you, but you look too old.
But she said it was semi-dark. So he didn't know. She just started juking him and broke the table over his head and juking him and then baby shampoo.
I'm taking this.
And the broomstick.
Exactly.
I'm taking this to Hollywood. And if Chris Tucker ain't doing Rush Hour, I'm just going to get her to replace Chris Tucker.
This is, man, I'm telling you.
I love her already.
This is a movie. That's a movie.
She's my favorite.
I don't even know her name. She's my
Kung Fu Granny.
Kung Fu Granny.
Tyler Perry will do it. All right.
Madea versus Intruder.
Darren McFarlane going to join us, the Preds. Obviously, we'll get back to the Jags and Titans. Big win for the Titans yesterday, 42-20. But the Preds go on the road and beat the Stanley Cup champs 4-2 in St. Louis. It cost them Victor Arvidsson, however. We will talk with Darren McFarlane. What does it mean for the Preds moving forward? We'll talk with him when we return right here on Morning Drive.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.